Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. Today, I'm so blessed to be joined by this man. They're a wonderful man that I've had many opportunities to work with as part of the shows on Cognitum. Welcome to the podcast, Morgan J. Ingram. Morgan, how are you?
I'm great, man. I'm glad you added the J, so you already get even more bonus points than you already had, and I'm excited to be here.
There we go. There we go. So Morgan, I was doing a bit of research. Obviously, I feel like I know you on a personal level, but I was doing a bit of research before the podcast. Have you ever put your name into ChatGPT to see what it says?
Without the J or with the J?
With the J, so I said, "Who is Morgan J. Ingram?" So I said, "I've got this podcast this afternoon. I'm really excited. I've got Morgan J. Ingram on. Who is Morgan J. Ingram?" And the answer was, Morgan J. Ingram was a 20-year-old woman in Carbondale, Colorado, whose death has been the subject of significant controversy and debate. That's not
Okay,
you. You're not a
I should
woman.
not be laughing about that. So the thing I'm gonna so here, this is actually this is interesting though. So that's the reason why I put the J.
Oh.
So
But do you know that her name is, her middle name is also begins with a J?
I actually didn't know that part. So essentially, I typed in Morgan Ingram when I first started creating content because I was like, okay, you want to get to a point where your name can be obviously Googleable, right? And so I put in Morgan Ingram, and I'm like, I probably won't have that much competition. But then, obviously, there was a girl. She was on Dr. Phil, and she had like died or committed suicide or something of that nature. So I was like, okay, well, there's no way I'm ever gonna be able to like that's very tragic. So then I was like, okay, and then I was like, let me just add a J. So then that's the reason why I put it was like Morgan J. Ingram, and that's the reason why it's still there.
Well, I'm glad we're here. I didn't know if I should start the podcast on that note. I just thought it was interesting that I was like, does Morgan identify as a 20-year-old woman? No? Okay, moving
Now we
on.
had to
I'm gonna
clarify.
hit you with
But now
it.
here's the thing. If you type in just Morgan Ingram now, like it
You win.
I am above the threshold now. But I mean obviously still
That's
there, but like I am above the threshold.
influence. That is the power of influence. Morgan, we're impressed. Anyway, that was a long-winded way of me asking the question, who are you and what problem do you solve?
So I'm Morgan J. Ingram, right? Well, a complete side note, if you actually type in Morgan Ingram now, it actually has like marker on the top. We made it through. But the problem that I solve is helping people generate pipeline with new revenue streams and innovative ways of how to do that.
Okay. And I feel like I've heard a bit about your journey, but I don't know loads and loads. But how did we end up here?
Yeah, so I was born. That was the first step.
Good.
We did that step. And then, growing up, to not go too far back, but growing up, I had no desire to ever be in sales, and I had no desire to ever create content. I wanted to be a pro gamer, and I wanted to be just chill and play games. So this is actually an important part of the story. So in middle school, I played Halo 2. Most of you listening probably know what that game is. And I got good enough to become pro. So I played in like MLG. I played against like competitive Halo 2. And I told my parents this is what I want to do. But at the time, there wasn't anyone making like a lot of money from gaming. So they were like, nah, like you need to go to school. So I didn't win that battle. But that actually taught me a lot because I ended up being like the co-captain of that team. I ended up playing a good amount of games, a lot of communication, a lot of strategy in that. So as I went through that, I always was like, what is the thing that can get me excited as much as Halo 2 did? That I was always looking for, and I never found it during high school or college. But it wasn't until after college that I actually got into public speaking, and that's when I found the energy again. And then from public speaking, I then went to the National Speakers Association when I was living in Atlanta, and one of the people there told me I should get into tech sales so that I could have some credibility around the things that I speak around so I could elevate it even more. And that's how I got into it. So I ended up cold calling the VP of sales at Terminus through the intro that I had and everything. And then I ended up being an SDR for about 12 months. But in that 12 months, that's when I started creating content on YouTube, the SDR Chronicles. And that was in 2016. And that's how everything elevated for my my brand, my content, everything elevated from there. So that's where the journey started. And my whole entire career has really been focused on how do you get people's attention? And then ultimately, how does that convert into like obviously a meeting? And then that leads obviously into money. So that's where it all started.
I think you've missed a piece of the puzzle there. There was a big jump. So you're playing Halo 2. Women are just throwing themselves at you. Women love Halo 2.
Yeah, right? Overload. So yeah, it was crazy.
Overload.
Time. Yeah.
Your parents are like, let me tell you about my son. He's playing Halo 2 professionally. It's just unbelievable. Accolades everywhere. What's the jump from that to being a public speaker? Like, why do you even start?
Yeah. So the thing is that in college, senior year, sophomore year, me and a friend, we made a decision to start a business. We were two separate businesses. My business, actually, this I did miss the connect here. My business was called Collegiate Gaming Land. So I created a business that hosted video game tournaments on college campuses. And I did that at University of Georgia. We did some at Kennesaw and then like one time at Georgia State or Georgia Tech. And during that time, as I was creating this business, the way that I actually got sponsors and the way that I got venues is I would go into, I'm still laughing about this because like, I don't know why they let me do this. I went inside the restaurants like during the week when like no one was in there. And I'd say, ask for the owner because I knew that they were going to be there because like, obviously like it's slow time. So they're probably just doing the finances and the accounting. So then I said, hey, like, you know, how much foot traffic do you like you have during like Monday through Wednesday? And they were like, yeah, not that much. And I was like, yeah, so I know it's pretty empty right now, but I could fill this up during those slow hours. And they're like, how would you do that? I was like, yeah, well, you probably don't have gamers that come in here. Gamers probably never come in here because they don't want to spend time in here at all. They're probably at home gaming. But if you hosted a gaming tournament here, then people would show up. And so people showed up. And then basically we started getting sponsors. So I got Dave & Buster's, which is, if you're listening in the States, like an arcade place you can go play games at. And then we got like breweries, a sponsor that were local. So yeah, that's how I got into like my entrepreneurship, I guess, bag. And then from there, I got invited on the Red and Black. And then they asked me to speak on the success we had because we were making money and I was in college. So $100 is like $1 million. And then that's when organizations asked me to come do public speaking. And then that's why I got into public speaking because people said I was good at it. And then I just kept going from there. So yeah, we bridged the gap there.
Nice. That's quite an innovative idea to think, right, I'm going to see that venue there, that restaurant, whatever it may be, Dave & Buster's, and I'm going to solve a problem for them. So what actually gave you that inspiration to even take that leap in the first place?
To start the company or to go get the sponsor?
To start kind of, yeah, like knocking on the doors and saying like, I can fill on Monday to Wednesday, I can fill this up. Like what gave you the inspiration that that was even something you could do?
Class was just boring, man. Like I didn't find anything exciting about going to class at all. Like it was just boring. And then I think a part of it too, is that we were in an entrepreneurship class and there were so many people talking about doing something. I just told my friends, like, we should just do something. Like, the worst case scenario is like nothing happens and like nobody cares. So we might as well try. And so that's why I decided to make that effort. And then I also thought about where can I start that I already know things in. I was like, well, I know how to throw events because I had thrown some events. Well, I used to throw a lot of parties in college anyway. So that is a lot of event management, throwing big parties, to be fair. So I was like, I have experience because I used to throw like really big parties. And then I was like, I've done some event management for a couple organizations that I was in. So I was like, I know how to do that. And then I was like, well, I'm good at video games. So I know what that means. And then I was like, I'm pretty sure I could talk to people. So like, I could just go up to them and ask. And if they don't like me, it is what it is. The funniest part about this, y'all, like, I don't talk about this often and I still think it's very funny. So the gamers at first at UGA or the University of Georgia didn't want to talk to me because they thought I was just like trying to use them. And so basically I had to go challenge one of their top gamers to see if I was legit. So I literally went into this club and there was like 50 people watching me play this one person in Super Smash. And the basically was like, are you good or not to even like have this conversation with us? That was like the most intimidating thing ever. Cause it was like I was like literally sweating. Cause I was like, dude, if I look terrible and they're all going to talk trash about me, it's not going to happen. So yeah, I did not win, but it was so close that immediately all of them were like, all right, respect. We thought you just couldn't play games. We thought you were just like some guy who just could just talk. And so they like rallied around me. And so like they got all the people at the events, like the events ended up being like packed out events because they knew I could play the video games. Very interesting. Game recognizes game. So it plays across all professions, which is interesting. But anyways, I started it because I was like, why would I not start this? There's nothing else that I'm actually doing right now. I might as well do this. And that's what led to it.
Nice. So you've seen the Wolf of Wall Street. We're talking to the Wolf of Skyrim over there.
Yeah, it was it was so like, oh, I wish I had like a video. It was just so wild to walk in and people are like, yeah, we're going to see if this guy's legit or not.
Nice. So I think a lot of SDRs are going to listen to this one and they're going to probably come to it because they want those practical tips. They're sick of hearing from me and Jack and they like our stuff, especially when we all get together. That's what my hope is. But let's say they're coming to this because they've got a list of 50 accounts. They're an SDR. They've got limited experience in the field, but they've got these 50 accounts to kind of make a name for themselves, start kicking down doors. If you were them right now in this day and age, where would you start?
I think the first place to start for anyone is the CRM and analyze a couple of things. So if you have enough, data, sometimes you may not, but most people should have enough. You should be able to look back in the past 6 months to see like what's been going on. And so what I mean by that is like, what deals have we closed? What roles are taking meetings with us? How big are those deals? And you can leverage that for like inevitably better conversations, right? So I would say first and foremost, that's a really big piece that I would recommend everyone to do. I would also go look at what are the deal deads that you have in the company, right? Like why were those deals dead so that you can know how to handle objections when you do reach out. And then I also would look at when the deals that are closed, what industries or company sizes were they? And so now that you have a good analysis of what that is, now you're like prepared to figure out, okay, out of these 50 accounts, where should I start reaching out? And then once you do that, then the next step is, all right, what are some use cases that I can leverage inside of these 50 accounts? So let's say they're all cybersecurity. Well, you need to go get at least 2 to 3 cybersecurity use cases. So when you're emailing and you're calling, you're way more proficient and people are willing to listen and hear you out. So if you do all those things, that should lead to more success and you should lead to get more responses. So that's number one. Number two is then I would say, okay, within these 50 accounts, who is someone on my internal executive team or who is someone on my overall team that can help me get into these accounts? Is it a client, et cetera, whatever it may be. So I'm not going to start asking for referrals because you only have 50 accounts. So you actually can do this. I'm going to start asking for referrals to see what to do and how to engage from there. And then ultimately, the third thing that I would do is I would think about different ways to stand out, not the generic, hey, let's do a connect and pitch. I'm different in this way, but I always recommend doing a nice little voice note, a nice little video is going to help you stand out. But there's other things you can do too. If you're a really good writer, think about ways on how can you add your personality to your writing to stand out and make people laugh or chuckle or whatever it may be, right? Everyone is different, but you have to think about how to be different. Otherwise, you're just going to be amongst what everyone else always says. So those are the three things that I'd immediately start with. And I know we can unpack a lot more, but that's at least where I'm starting, right? That's the key.
There was some good stuff there. I think this might sound like a stupid question, but I've got to ask it. What when you say like use cases, could you give us some like examples of what that might actually look like? So people hear that all the time, and I hear people say long tail use cases, short tail use cases. Here's a middle sized use case. What does that actually look like for if you're building a campaign out?
Yeah, I don't think you need a what long tail. Is that like a biography?
It's big.
We don't need all that. This is literally just a one sentence thing. It basically is like, hey, we work with this company in cybersecurity, we increase something by X, and like that's it, right? You're just literally describing something that's super simple. Like I might say, hey, we worked with this company in the space with an influencer marketing campaign and we influenced $500,000 in pipeline. That's literally it. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. Also, if you can get it, if you can get like a quote card or an infographic you can put there, that's also great too. But I don't want people to overthink this one. You just need like a sentence that describes what impact you had on whatever client it was, and then you go from there.
Okay. What's, do you know the psychology behind that? Like why that works? I know that's a big question.
No. So the reason that it will, the only way that it works actually is if you focus on a company within the industry that they're in. If you do like we overall increase by 30%, that actually is dangerous. You actually see a decrease in response rates. But if you say, hey, I've worked with someone in your space and we saw this, well, then now you feel psychologically that you're behind. You're like, wait, someone in my space is doing what? So then now we can go from there. So that's essentially what I would recommend people to focus on and do, because that's obviously going to help you in the long run.
And then how would you tie in that and that psychology when cold calling, or would you not? How would you approach that using use cases and I guess using client stories, etc.
I mean, same thing, right? Because you could start a call and do your intro, whatever, and they say, "Hey, talk," and I say, "Yeah." So my name's Morgan Ingram. I'm from. We have a meeting, and we actually just worked with someone that's similar in your space, and we just did a workshop with them, and we saw a 2x conversion rate, and they're calling 3 times more. And I thought that might be something that you'd be interested in. So okay. Now they're like, okay, similar in my space, like what's going on? And I know I say similar in the space too, because I know on a deeper level, legally, some companies you may not be able to mention, but for the most part, I can say, hey, similar in your space. And now you're like, wait, okay, what does that mean? And now I can unpack what that means from there.
It's such an interesting one. My negative bias, I have like feelings towards that. My negative bias would flare up that if you don't know who you're going into, I know that you've only got 50 accounts, but say you're going into Coca-Cola and you were to say, like, we've recently converted Pepsi, all of a sudden, like, I'm thinking that their negative bias is going to be like, who are you to put me in the same breath as Pepsi? Or do you know what I mean? Like, so how do you, well, how do you, okay, do that kind of tactfully?
Here's the thing. I would not go call Coca-Cola and say I'm working with Pepsi. Okay. I would call Coca-Cola and say I'm working with Anheuser-Busch.
For the Brits in the room.
So it's like, it's basically like who makes like Coors and stuff. It's still in the beverage industry. So they're like, okay, that makes sense. But no, I wouldn't call Coca-Cola and say Pepsi. I'm not going to call McDonald's and say, hey, I'm working with Burger King. They're going to be like, wait, what? I'd call McDonald's and say, hey, we worked with Wendy's. We work with people in the similar space. But I'm not going to mention a competitor. I'm just going to say, hey, we've worked with someone in that space. Like, I wouldn't call sales off and say, hey, I'm working with Outreach. It's like, I'd call sales off and say, hey, I'm working with Gong. It's in your space, but it's not the same, to clarify, because that's not going to work. They're going to be mad.
That's good, because I think some people might listen to this, and next thing you know, you're running in and you're saying, oh my God, you heard of Kentucky Fried Chicken? Well, we're Kentucky Fried Ribs or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, that's not it. If you take that advice, that's Jack's advice to do that, not mine. But what I'm saying is, if you call someone, it's just similar in the space. We want to get someone to similar. Hey, McDonald's.
Some social proof.
We worked with Wendy's. Okay, that's in the space. But yeah, don't call McDonald's and say we work for Burger King. That's not going to work out for you well.
I like it. It's good advice already, Morgan. I looked at your LinkedIn profile before this. I've seen you. I go on every night just before bed just to remember what your face looks like.
Tuck yourself in.
Tuck myself in, and then I get into bed. And I know you've got like 150,000 followers, something mad like that. Plus. I'm sure you know the number off by heart, but if I got them all in a room and I asked them all to like sum up your personal brand in 3 words, what would you hope they'd say, or what do you think they might say? Like, who are you as a collective, I guess?
What I would hope they say and what I think they say, I know are gonna ask different things. So here's the thing. I have an answer for you, but I want to say this before I answer. I'm in a very unique space, and some others are in this unique space where we've been creating for 5+ years. So when I've been doing it for 8. So when you put yourself out there for so long, everything in the narrative changes across the board of how people perceive or see you or whatever it may be. Now, I think what most people perceive me as is in a couple buckets, either They watched me in the SDR Chronicles, so they know me for sales development. So that's like probably the main thing. Most people know me for like LinkedIn Sales Navigator, or they'll just say, hey, they know me for top of the funnel go to market. I think overall, most people would say, hey, like I respect being Ron Morgan. He's always willing to help. He's always willing to be there for me. And he's always an advocate and stays positive. That's what I would believe would say now. How I want it to be, I think in the future of like where my focus is now is, you know, I want to be able to be someone who is known for helping people access new revenue streams and in ways to get pipeline and go to market. And that so happens right now to be an influencer marketing and the content that we do. But that's what I want people to think of is like, wow, Morgan's always heading to where we're going. And that's the person I want to follow, because like he knows where we're going and he's able to showcase how that works with results. And that's what I'm now looking to showcase at this point. I don't think everyone believes that, but that's my goal now.
Yeah. So it's like leading the way, which I think is brilliant. And I think it's also like, it's unrealistic to expect the same Morgan 8 years ago. Like I didn't follow you. I only know the new Morgan for a couple of years, but I think it's like, obviously it's going to change. So then my question would be for you, personal brand is one of those phrases. I get it. It makes you want to be stick a bit in your mouth, but for you, it makes sense. Me and Zach, we're building a business. It makes complete sense that we're trying to be thought leaders and we want to go out and we have a podcast, all of those things. So for the everyday SDR, do they need a personal brand? Should they have a personal brand? Why, if so?
So my answer here is controversial for most, because I don't think that everyone should have a personal brand as an SDR. And this is coming from someone who had a personal brand as an SDR, have coached and trained a lot of people on this. And then this is where people are like, whoa, you have a brand. Like, why would you tell people not to do that? Because I think everyone needs it because everyone's goals are different. I knew where my skills were and I knew what I needed to do and I knew what I wanted to become. And I was like, I need to create content. In 2016, I knew that one of the most valuable skill sets that you can have is to create content, because that ultimately is a skill set of getting attention. And if you can get attention, you can pretty much do anything. So that was like my whole mindset. But most people may not want to have that mindset. They may want to be a really good seller. They want to like get really good at that craft and they don't want to do anything with creating a brand and they would rather just be in the weeds. Great. So I think that you need to take a step back and realize, why would you actually want to go create the brand? What does that mean to you? Long term, what are you looking to build before you decide to do that? I don't think every single SDR should have it. I do think it is important, though, to have a good internal brand. So that's why you need to do the work. But the external brand, you could still have a good one by doing the work internally. But if you feel like called, or you feel compelled, or you're like, you are good at video, you are good at creating content, and you've always wanted to do it, I do encourage you to hop on it, because it is a fantastic opportunity. But I don't think every single person should have all the, I mean, I got a lot of gear around me. I don't think everyone should have all this stuff to create content. I don't think it's that necessary at the end of the day. You need to focus on getting good at what you do first.
Nice. Okay. One of the other things that you mentioned that I'm always interested in this topic is around, you're big on sending out a voice note or a bit of personalized video or something like that out to people in terms of outreach, which I think is great if you've got like a smooth tone like me and you. If you look like me and you, like not Jack, out of rock. If you're Jack and you're someone who's maybe not as handsome, maybe like his tone of voice isn't as smooth, what would you advise for someone like Jack?
What a schmuck. Who by this guy?
You're just out of luck, man. It's pretty much game over. I mean, you might as well find another crew. That's pretty much how I see it at this point. So here's the thing. I say this, and a lot of people get upset typically, but it just is the reality. The predication of how you respond to something does not mean how someone else will respond to something. So what I mean by that is, if you go make a voice note and you're like, I don't respond to voice notes. Well, okay, you don't. Who cares? The other person that you're reaching out to actually might respond to that. Because you may like reading emails, but the person you reach out to may hate emails. So the reason I say add another element is because this is just another way to get in front of somebody. And it's free and it costs you nothing except for your time, which most people don't do it. And also the way that I see it is, I still would encourage people to do, this is the funny part. The thing is, I still encourage people to do the video, because at some point they are going to see your face when you get on a call. So it really, there's no way you're going to hide this. So you got, At some point, they're going
to
see you.
Why are you laughing
so
hard? There's nothing to hide, Morgan. I'm so laughing. Happy.
I'm not laughing at you, Jack. I'm just laughing at people who are like, oh, I don't want anyone to see me in video. It's like, but you're going to hop on a video call with them and they're going to see you. So I'm like, what are we even talking about? And even if you don't care about that, and you say, I don't want them to hear my voice, it's like, okay, so how are you going to sell them? You're just going to go via email? So it's like, the excuses I hear, like, it doesn't, I just like, that doesn't make sense. Like, there are going to be people who don't like voice notes. Okay, cool, whatever. Send the voice note. No one's going to get that upset, to be fair. And if they do, then you just follow up and then you just write out what you said in the voice note. It's just like not that, I don't think this is that hard and difficult, but I think people, again, are afraid to get outside of their comfort zone, which myself included, there's some things that I don't like to do, but I know everything outside of the comfort zone is where you succeed, right? And so I tell people that may feel intimidated or annoyed or whatever, I would say you already are writing probably good emails. So just use that emails as like your script to like do the voice notes. And then once you get comfortable with voice notes, start doing videos.
Okay. You mentioned there's things that even you won't do. What are those things?
Yeah. Like I do not, I've gotten better at it, but I just don't like writing sometimes. Like I just feel like it takes too long. Like I'm like, okay, I'd rather just do a video. I can crank out those really fast. Or I can crank out a voice notes really fast. But writing takes me a while. And I've gotten better at it over time. And now I feel proficient with it and I'm pretty good. pretty solid now. But yeah, I just didn't like writing because I was like, it's not as comfortable to me because like it takes me a while to like process the thoughts that I have. It's easier for me to talk it out loud. That's why I'm able to move faster that way. So that makes me uncomfortable. I used to be very uncomfortable with cold calling actually. So I used to like not like to do that at all. And over time, I just embraced it to get better at it. So that now I am good at it. But initially, like, no, I just didn't like getting rejected. So I was like, I'd rather just do videos because like you could see me. Great. It's a higher likelihood because I was just more comfortable doing videos at that point. So, yeah, those are a couple of things that were just outside of my comfort zone that I typically would like not like to do. I would rather send you a video or meet you in person. I would not like to cold call or send you an email or whatever, all the other stuff. It just wasn't for me. But I got over that and I learn to level up the skills.
Wow. Jack's not like that. He'll do anything if the price is right.
Yeah. Look at this smirk.
Anyway, let's move on. So I'm sure, like us, Morgan, you know, you got into sales. You didn't necessarily want to get into sales. When the teacher asked you at school, what do you want to be when you're older? You didn't say, I want to work in sales. So with that comes some mindset issues along the way of dealing with rejection, trying to be consistent. And a lot of the time, that's why people are tuning into this, for those little hacks and tips. So if you're a new salesperson listening and you're looking for those little mindset hacks or ways of thinking about rejection, what have you found works really well for you?
No, the number one thing is nobody cares as much as you think. That sounds very morbid and sad, but that's true. People get, this is when everything changed for me in cold calling. You call somebody and you're like, oh, they rejected me. And I'm like, okay, yeah, they're going to forget you in 5 seconds. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And then also as well, there's nothing you're ever going to say unless you're egregious and just way out of pocket. No one's going to like fly to your place in your apartment and be like, hey, like, why did you say that on a cold call? That was absolutely terrible. And like bang your window. Like they're not going to do that. So I always say like that you can easily get over the fear of rejection, realizing that what you're saying and what you're doing is actually not that important. And there's like peace in that to a degree. Like it's not that important as you think. And so that's actually really helpful to just be like, cool. Okay. That person was interested. And then we move on. Right. I think number two is knowing that in the rejection itself, there's always going to be a great conversation that's happening because rejection in life and in sales is part of what happens. You can't get to anywhere without a rejection. I can't think of any sport or famous person that has not faced a rejection and had to go through it. I don't know anyone who hasn't faced some adversity or rejection. And ultimately, through the rejection, you should be excited because you actually learn things along the way. If you don't have rejection, then you could just schedule meetings left and right. That's cool. But what happens when you face adversity and you had to handle the objections? You won't know what to do. So if you face the objections, if you face the adversity, you actually skill yourself up over time to be proficient. And so that's the thing as well. And I think also the third thing is I just think about the rejection that we face, is that going to hold us back from going and doing the things we want to accomplish? And the thing is, like, you also have to think about that as well. Like, does the goals that you have, does it outweigh the rejection you feel for 5 seconds? And if it does, then you should continue on. And most people, that should be the case. So I think about it in that way. But I think number one is, like, what I said, if you realize that most people just don't care after you cold call them and they reject you, or they reject you on a, like, they're just going to forget you, then it allows you to be in a better state about it as a whole.
So aside from when you walked into that gaming room and you slapped one of the gamers with an Xbox controller and challenged them to a duel, aside from that,
what nobody would you say? Does that.
That's why. That's what I was imagining.
Slapping controller, that's wild.
There you go, PS2 to the face.
Oh my gosh.
When you think of rejection, like, what are the big ones? What stands out to you? What makes your body kind of live that moment again? Because you must have. A bloke like you, Morgan, you must have been rejected your whole life at points.
Ever since I came out the womb, they were like, I don't know about this one. Unsubscribe irks me still to this day. I feel like that was just a gut punch. Especially, this is when it made me really angry. When I would do like a personalized video and they say unsubscribe, I'm like, are you kidding me? I got mad one day and I was just like, this is literally a personalized video for you. How could you unsubscribe from something that is personalized to you? Right. And so, yeah, that makes me really upset. Or another one that gets me is, I'll say like my value prop and someone's like, yeah, I'm just not interested. Hangs up on you. Dang. It's like, that just, whatever I said made no sense. Like, so it's like, that was not good. I think another one is when, like, you're on a sales call and like they just say like, yeah, like I just need to like digest the information and I'll get back to you. You just know that they just literally, whatever you said wasn't good at all. Right. So it's just things like that that I think are always going to be gut punches. But again, I've just changed my mindset with rejection. Literally, if something happens and it's bad, I'm like, I literally just tell myself, great. Okay. What can I learn? There's three things, right? Either it's, what can I learn to be better next time? Two, maybe this opportunity actually wasn't for me. Maybe it's actually great, because I've been rejected in some scenarios and then like I thought the client would be great and then 2 months later they're out of business. So it's like, okay, maybe that was good. Or like a job that I had and like I got rejected and it was like they didn't get the funding round they said in 3 months. Okay, so probably good that it wasn't there. So I always think it could be like an aversion to something. Or three, it's like, okay, that rejection happened and there's a lot I could just grow from this experience and from there. So right, those are like the three things I think about. So I don't really get to caught up in it, because I've been priming myself to be like, okay, great, the rejection happened, okay, what do we do? How can we get better here? Or maybe I was just saved from something.
Yeah,
maybe that was going to be the worst client ever and I'm that's great too.
Nice.
So it's a different mindset.
Yeah, and I think the way you said it, priming, it doesn't come naturally, like, but you're always working towards it. And like you can, I think people that are maybe struggling with the mindset now, they need to remember that it doesn't happen overnight, but over years of mini rejections. It was interesting then. I asked, like, what's the rejection that irks you? And you said, like, you didn't say, oh, this one bloke told me this one time and it stuck with me. You're like, these are the mini rejections, are like the mini punches that get to you and kind of build up a bigger picture.
I feel like the outlandish, if someone tells me to F off or something like that, I honestly don't even, like, in the moment, yeah, you're like kind of annoyed, but then like you revert back to it. And I think it's because I've been in the content game so long, I think I've reverted to this mindset. I just feel bad for people when they tell me to F off on the phone call. Because if a cold call can irk you that much to tell me to F off and I haven't actually said anything mean to you, you have a way worse life than I do in this current moment. So I actually feel bad for you, because that shouldn't make you upset. If someone cold calls me and I tell them to F off, like, I'm in a terrible mood. Like, something's really bad in my life. Like,
yeah.
They cold call you. It's like not that deep.
Like, do you, because you create a lot of content, do you ever experience like rejection? Like, we've had it recently on a few bits, but like rejection in the
You're a little crazy though. You're a little out of pocket sometimes. I think you're reaching for it, to be fair.
Always pushing for that next rejection.
You're pushing for stuff though.
It's my sexy vice. I love it. I love smoke.
You're,
I love
pushing for controversy though. So I don't know. That's not a fair comment.
No, but like it. In like you create YouTube and like all of this, like, when, if you read any like negative rejections, does that ever, like, once you put so much time, effort into a video, you've created something, and then there's like trolls in the comments hitting you with that rejection, does that hit, or like it's in a different level?
For sure. 2016 to 2018, early 2018 was very rough for me because I was one of the only creators on LinkedIn, so I didn't have anyone to talk to. So everyone who creates now is like, transparently, it's just a lot easier because you have people you can talk to about it and you can vent. I had no one to vent to. It was just me and like going through it. So yeah, I had people tell me that I was too young. I had people that were racist. I had people tell me like to F Jesus. Off the platform. I had people tell me that like this isn't going to work. But the thing is, I it was hurtful for sure. But also I didn't care because I was so locked in. I was like, yeah, this is just going to work. Like I don't really care what y'all are saying. But in that moment, yeah, it was hard. Like there were times I 100% wanted to like quit or stop because it's like, when you don't have like the support, it's a lot more difficult. But I also knew that it was the right path and it has proven to be so. So, but for sure, I definitely have had those moments. And the other thing is that's the reason I don't go on TikTok, or I'll have my team be on TikTok, because TikTok is just weirdly hostile. Like I posted like, hey, this is how you handle objection. And someone told me to go hang myself. And I'm like, How did we get here? How am I sharing how to help you and you want me to hang myself? Like there's way worse content out here that is telling you way worse things, but I'm getting hang yourself because I'm telling you how to handle an objection. I'm like, okay, this is just stupid. So that's why I don't post on TikTok. People are like, oh, it's a great growth opportunity. It's like, I don't really care. My piece and my hat is fine. So I don't care about that at all. Like y'all can go do whatever you want with that, because like that's not for me. So yeah, that's just the stupid part of it. But I think at this point, yeah, man, most of the stuff I straight up laugh at it, or I just delete it, or I just call them out. Like when people say dumb stuff, I ask them a question and I'm like, okay, so how exactly do you do this? And then they don't have an answer, and then I follow 5 days later and said, oh, okay, so you didn't have an answer. Like most people just troll to troll. Like, they don't have
you
answers.
You troll
to
troll. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they don't have answers. Some people are like, oh, that's not how I do it. Okay, Claudia, what'd you do it? Well, I don't know how to do it. So, okay, so then piss off. So it's like, what are we doing? So, like, yeah, at this point, I just laugh at people because I know they, and this might sound like crude, but it's like not. It's like, if someone's going to approach and be in and come with it, I'm cool with that. I had a conversation yesterday where someone was like, we were on like a call, it was like a webinar call. And someone was like, hey, I don't like this webinar. I don't like this email framework you have. I was like, cool, come up. What would you do better? And he's like, well, I actually don't exactly know how to teach that. And I said, okay. So I was like, okay. So what advice would you give to people if this is wrong? And he's like, well, you need to add more personality. And I was like, okay, but what does that mean?
Mm.
And he's like, well, I just wanted to make a film more human. So I was like, okay, so essentially what you're saying is you wouldn't do this because the framework, you don't like it because it's static. I'm just showing you an example of how to do it. But you need to add your own personality. And guess what? We all walked away agreeing that we needed to mix both, and no one was harmed in the process. But what I've realized is that 99% of people that troll and say something, they're just upset because you're probably in a position that they want to be in. You probably have a point that they're putting stuff out there that's valid, and they just want to be controversy for controversy's sake, yet they don't actually have a point. That's why I always ask questions to people, because they actually don't have a point.
I'd agree. When I troll, I have no point. I just want to be controversial. you make some great points, and I think me and Zach have said it when we do the Cognizant shows, like people go, that would never work, blah blah blah, and we're just like, I'm not being a twat, but there's a reason like you're in the comments and we're on the show like talk. There's a reason we've been invited to talk about it, but you like saying it won't work. Okay, it doesn't work, whatever, I don't really care. Morgan, I feel like we could speak to you all day. I'm going to hit you with one last question. What's the, if somebody's looking to get better at sales right now, what's the one sales book that they should go out and buy? And you can't say Nick Kogelski. His name's banned from our podcast after what he did in Malibu.
He's banned. All right. I really liked, if I had to pick a sales book and not deviate and say you shouldn't read a sales book and you should read psychology, so I'm not going to do that here. I'm going to actually answer the question, even though that's the answer to the question. I would tell you to go read The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need by Anthony Ilanaro. That's actually a very fantastic book. I would encourage people to read that.
Nice. And if it was a psychology book, because that's where me and Zach geek out, what would you say?
I'm going to give a basic answer, and then I'm going to give something a little bit more advanced. The basic answer is How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's like the basic answer. But then the advanced answer is Captivate by Vanessa Van Edwards. And essentially it allows you to read body language, facial expressions. Since we're in the virtual world, like understanding how to read people's expressions, very important, right? So that's a key thing there.
Nice. And I'm trying to read your body language. Have you enjoyed yourself, Morgan?
I always love talking to y'all.
It's too kind. Well, we've loved talking to you.
I always enjoy it.
Morgan, thank you so much for joining us. I feel like we'll have to get you back on and maybe delve into your gaming history a little bit more.
That's the pod that people are waiting for.
Sally, drop it already. Drop the haircuts that every SDR should have. That's what we want. Thank you, Morgan.
All right, y'all. Cheers.
Cheers, man.